Welcome into another edition of the Flagrant 2 podcast right here on CBSSports.com. Just got done with radio, so almost at CBS Sports Radio. He is Reed Forgrave. I am Bill Ryder. I am sitting next to Joey Levin, the producer, which we don't usually do, so it's a very unpleasant experience. Subscribe, download, rate, and review on iTunes. Listen on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Do not ever give up on Operation Born Ready All-Stars. What is that, you ask? It's send Lance Stephenson to the All-Star game as the captain to tear a thunder and put to shambles Adam Silver and otherwise great commissioners' decision to allow these guys the All-Star game to be picking each other on teams. I hate everything about it, but Reed, I love everything about you. What's up, buddy?
All-Star game today, Hall of Fame tomorrow. Let's go Lance, baby. Let's go Lance.
Let's do this. To the four of you who listen to this podcast, we really appreciate you. Love you, Mom. What's up, Reed's mother? All right, so
Let's leave moms out of this, bro.
I didn't mean it that way. It did sort of came out the wrong way.
Yeah,
way. I meant like, hi, Mom. Hi, Reed's mom. What is that? Come on.
I don't know, man. Let's leave moms out of this. There was a great white man can't jump line about that, which I probably cannot use on this podcast, but it's a great line. End of story.
All right, so I think, Reed, I have this this sort of, not even a theory. I think there are two things that that are at stake this year in the NBA of significance that matter in terms of legacy and greatness. The first is the obvious one. It's the one that everyone's paying attention to. Who's going to win the NBA championship? The answer, I think, is self-evident. I think it's already answered. I don't think it's that interesting. The Golden State Warriors are going to win the NBA championship this year. I'll be shocked if the finals go to six games. I'll be shocked if they lose more than two games in their quest to win what? Would this be two in a row and three of the last four is what we're talking about? Amazing. But I think there's a parallel track. I think there's a secondary contest and competition. And I think there was a really significant game a few nights ago on that front. And that is, there's also a competition for the services of LeBron James. I think we all presume he's going to leave Cleveland. We all presume he's going to head somewhere else. But I think this notion, Reed, that he's going to be a Laker, that it's a certainty that's going to happen, has correctly subsided somewhat. And so LeBron's a guy who understands and has a remarkable sort of third-dimensional understanding of not just the moment, but his future and how to build it properly. When games like Philly versus the Lakers happen, it's not significant because either of those teams have an inkling of a chance at an NBA championship this year. The Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs, and if the Sixers do, they're young, they'll get smoked. I think what they are playing for is LeBron's attention and his affections. And Embiid going off for a ridiculous 46 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists, 7 block shots. What the f***? 7 block shots? Yeah, Joey, I said fuck, man. I think it's a message and a reminder to LeBron James what these guys are capable of. And by the way, Reed, like, I get why it's not the storyline. Ben Simmons had a Westbrook triple-double, which is to say 18 points, 9 rebounds, 10 assists. If it was Westbrook, one of his teammates would have given him a rebound. He would have gotten there. I mean, he basically had a triple-double that no one's paying attention to. He also played a ridiculous defense and had 5 steals. I'm not worried about Lonzo in terms of his long-term game. I know he can't shoot. I know he's having problems. I know Luke Walton bent him in the fourth quarter. For me, the takeaway is I think that game and what it symbolizes, what it means, what it reminds people like LeBron James of is I think the real consequence is that I think Philly's a legitimate destination for LeBron. It's a top 5 market. It's not far from New York. And while I know that he wants to in his career, he's always wanted to play with veterans, I think there will be a paradigm shift because I think LeBron understands that he's a top, let's say, 3 player. He can still impact his will on the game in a way maybe we've never seen for another 2 or 3 years. At a certain point, he's going to be the 5th best player, then the 10th. Then I think eventually he'll evolve into a really interesting basketball player who's a bruiser and can put his back to the basket. And by the way, like, I know he's not a great 3-point shooter. It kind of comes and goes. But LeBron's a guy that's always been able to work on his game. When he's eventually a spot-up shooter or a guy on the corner, I think he'll be a better 3-point shooter than he has been. I think he'll have value, is what I'm saying. He'll need other guys to carry him. And those are guys who are really great today and are stars tomorrow. 3 or 4 years. I think Philly made a very compelling case. They're more likely to be that team than the Lakers.
And, I mean, look, you speak about LeBron. The difference with LeBron compared to someone like Kobe, he's going to be willing to make that role shift. the idea of him on the Sixers, man, I don't know if he'll go there. I mean, the pull of Los Angeles, you lived there for what, 3 or 4 years, Bill? Pull of that city is very strong compared to a place like Philly, which is awesome. I love Philly. But if you're LeBron, you're looking for.
But I don't think that matters. Like I take.
You don't think it matters at all.
I don't think it's. I mean,
the Lakers brand being in Hollywood.
I take Maverick Carter at his word that what's going to matter for LeBron is winning. He had this interview a week or two ago that what matters for LeBron is winning. That in 2017 the brand can be projected from anywhere. I think if LeBron James could like wave a magic wand to make any team the right fit for him, he'd make it Cleveland. If he couldn't make it Cleveland, yeah, he'd make it the Lakers. And I think there's an added benefit to all of those things. But LeBron James, and I'm not hating on Cleveland, chose to live in Cleveland, Ohio, right? Philly's an upgrade in that respect. I don't know.
Philly's an upgrade, but it's not home. It's not home.
But, dude, LeBron, I mean, home. Like, LeBron's a citizen of the world. I mean, he has homes wherever he wants to have homes. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
and I think
the
Lakers like have a little bit of an advantage there, but I no one's talking about Minnesota, and I get why. I think Minnesota, they're not a contender like I think Philly is or Houston, but I think Minnesota is a legitimate dark horse team because they have young guys, because Jimmy Butler's a veteran, because I know LeBron respects Thibodeau. I don't think they're head and shoulders above the others.
Tickling my funny bone here, bro. Minnesota, I love it.
I don't think it'll happen, but I think like if Embiid were in Minnesota instead of in Philly, like you added Embiid to that mix, let's for example, I think Minnesota would be a contender. I think he'll go. He wants to pass Jordan. And a guy that's willing to watch everything that he drinks, everything that he eats, who studies film, who like goes to lengths that we haven't seen in a long time to try to be the greatest of all time, what's living in some city that's not Los Angeles if that is the key to passing Jordan?
Well, I mean, just as an NBA fan, man, the idea of him going to that Sixers team, which I think, look, it's so early in Ben Simmons' career, but can we say they have two superstars? Like I know, yes. Joey hates Ben Simmons. Yep. Hates Ben Simmons.
Joey's wrong.
Absolutely abhors him as a human being.
Are you willing to say you got that one wrong?
What? That he can't shoot?
No, that's not what you said. Oh. Are you willing to say you got wrong that he wasn't gonna be that great? You thought he was overrated and he's not gonna be a star.
Yeah.
That's fine.
He's definitely better than I expected.
Yeah, yeah,
much better.
By the way,
yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you guys. Reed had we're talking to Jamal Crawford later in the podcast. Reed had a great interview with him. Should have plugged that. Should have promoted it. My bad.
That's all right. Love Jamal Crawford, but yeah, I mean, just look, man. Just as a basketball fan, the idea of an aging LeBron adjusting to his new role in the NBA, joining two guys who are on the opposite end of the spectrum career-wise, who are on the upswing, who are just learning the game, those guys being able to be mentored by LeBron. And by the way, let's not forget Markelle Fultz. As much as those free throws were ugly, I think we can say they were at least partially caused by this injury. Whether he has the yips or not, we'll see. But he's still an enormous talent. Fitting those four guys together – that would immediately become a super team, and it would be a type of super team that would be very different than this Cleveland Cavaliers super team, Bill, which is a team comprised of veterans that was always going to decline quickly, whereas the Sixers with LeBron would – they'd be on the upslope. So just as an NBA fan, I think that would be so good for the league. Los Angeles.
Let me play devil's advocate. LeBron is obsessed with passing Jordan. Before this was like the thing to say, I remember he and I would have conversations about it, including one on camera, right, where he's like, I want to pass Jordan. 5 years ago, 4 years ago. I think he understands enough to know that beating the Warriors can be tough, but at what point does consecutive NBA finals appearances become so ridiculous that it becomes its own category on the level of winning NBA championships? If he makes 12 consecutive NBA finals, doesn't that or 11? He's at 7 now. So my point is, I think the West, from a legacy perspective, is problematic. It's one thing to lose to the Warriors in the finals for LeBron's legacy and his strategic vision for it. It's another to lose to them in the Western Conference. And the honest question, like the question is like, what's the difference? Here's the answer to the difference. LeBron gets the power of narrative, and he understands that being the best of all time isn't a quantitative reality. it's like he, it's like how baseball Hall of Fame should have been decided in the past. You ask, is the guy a Hall of Famer? Yes or no should be the answer. You ask if LeBron's the best of all time? Eventually, it's going to be a snap reaction from the hearts and minds of NBA fans. Yes or no, making 12 or 13 consecutive NBA finals, or 11 or 10 or whatever, you can't, you, he won't do it in the West. He will in the East. He could in the East.
He could in the East. He absolutely could in the East. Then the Sixers-Celtics becoming one of the best rivalries in the entire league. Because I think the Celtics would still be right up there with that team. I mean, just – I haven't spent that much time thinking about it, Bill. But, like, just the gloom of it is awesome. Like, I think it would be great. I think it would be awesome if it happens. You know LeBron, like – He very well could throw some curveball into there, and Philly would be just an awesome curveball. But wouldn't it be awesome if the consummation of the process ends in the Sixers signing LeBron?
Sam Hinkie gets so screwed. All right,
unfair.
Let's do this before we move on to duck shots, quick shots, quick shot duck shots, quick shot duck shots. Was that a good song?
Yeah, I like it.
Did you guys dig it?
Did we sing the DuckTales theme on a recent podcast? Do I remember this correctly?
I sang a line of it. One line.
It was impressive, Joey.
DuckTales! You knew all the words. Before we get there, I think we should do a whole podcast on this next week. But let's list off in order without any prep. Sorry, Reed. Sorry, Joey. I'll go first. The order you think the teams LeBron will play on, in the order you think it'll happen. Like the likelihood, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 1 Philly. I'm going to go 2 Lakers. I'm going to go, this is really hard, 3 Houston. I'm going to go 4 Minnesota. I'm going to go 5 Knicks. And I think after 2 or 3 is like highly unlikely. That's my order.
Whew, okay. I'm going to miss. Okay. I'm going to go 1 Lakers, 2 Cleveland. I still think there's a pull there. 3 Philly. 4 Knicks, 5, I mean, I guess Minnesota. I don't think that'll happen.
They're our top 5 city.
But boy, that'll be on. It is a top 5. This has been established, bro.
I'm going to go. I still think he's going to LA. I do. So I'm going to go 1 Lakers. I think 2. You have me convinced on this Philly thing. I don't know. I never really thought about it until we've started talking about it recently. But
can I throw one more thing about Philly in there?
Yeah.
By the way, Sam Amick pointed this out to me on the radio show, not me. But remember when LeBron went and watched Lonzo in Vegas, everyone's like, oh. What Sam Amick pointed out is that Rich Paul is the agent, is LeBron's agent, but also it's the agency LeBron will own when he, right? It's LeBron's agency.
Clutch.
Rich Paul is, right, Clutch Sports. He's also Ben Simmons' agent. And what Amick pointed out, because Amick was there, is that when LeBron went to see Lonzo, maybe he was actually going to see Philly, and I think it was Amick who told me, maybe it was Howard Beck, that like LeBron might have been there and everyone's talking about Lonzo, but LeBron was talking to Philly people, going up and saying hi to Simmons, going up and saying hi to like Philly executives. So we might have missed that entire thing.
I love it. It's like season one of a TV show. There's this little moment that you don't notice that becomes a huge moment by season 3. Ugh, wish it into existence, brother. I think that would be awesome for the NBA.
Okay, so. Yeah. Where am I at? Oh, 1, right?
Yeah, you got
I guess one, Philly. I can't go Philly. I'm going to go Cleveland, too. That's what you said, right, Reed?
I don't have Cleveland on the list. I think he's gone. I think it's over.
I don't think he's going to Minnesota. I'm going to go Knicks 3. I see it. I like the Houston idea. I'll go Houston 4, and then I'm going to go Dark Horse at 5. And say he goes back to Miami. Makes another decision to go to South Beach, to take his talents to South Beach.
Wow. Edginess. Dutch! All right, I'm not gonna sing. quick shots, Joey Levin. You, this is a Rorschach test. How we pronounce it? Reed?
Rorschach test.
You know why I did that wrong?
Rorschach.
He loves to correct people.
I do love to correct
people. My favorite thing is when like Reed will like correct me on the pronunciation of somebody where he's getting it wrong, and I'll just be like, "Oh,
that never happens. That never happens, bro. Never happens."
All right, this is a quicker quick shots today. We only have 6. Right, so,
and let's go real fast.
Yeah. So LeBron James is saying that
I want to get to Jamal Crawford.
Yeah. Interview. Yeah. LeBron James says that the Cavs' new travel schedule, staying overnight instead of traveling that night, is helping them because they are old. We're old, man. Whenever we get a chance to stay over for the night this season. We have to do that. And it's helped them win three in a row against the Mavs, the Knicks, and the Hornets. Bill.
I'm old. I like sleep. LeBron's old. He likes sleep. He's right. Sleep is right. I'm done.
Your old man team, your old ass team needs sleep in November. Just wait till March, man. The season's going to grind on this team. Grind, Joey. Grind.
All right. So we'll move on to KD. He said he still loves, in an interview with Rick Bucher, he said he still loves OKC, still loves a lot of the people there. Eventually he thinks they'll talk, but there ain't no such thing as loyalty in sports. Bill?
I wrote a column about this a few months ago at CBSSports.com. There is no loyalty. LeBron started this. It's not a put down. It's not a negative. This is what owners have done for a generation and a half. He's right. Don't be mad at Kevin Durant. He didn't create the reality. He's speaking to a reality that was created around him, and he's taking advantage of it.
And frankly, the reality existed before LeBron. Never has been loyalty in sports. It's only been in fans' minds. And I think fans, especially NBA fans who've seen so much movement, they're hip to it now.
KD's, I guess, he's all over the place right now. He had another interview with GQ where he said that the shot he made over LeBron in last year's finals, in quote, he said, "That was the best moment I've ever had. I made the game-winning shot in the finals against my effing idol, somebody that I really, really followed since I was in ninth grade. I felt like he was passing the torch to me." Reed.
There's no passing the torch when you're hitting a shot in some dude's eye. Let's simmer down, KD. LeBron's not passing the torch to anybody. Certainly not a dude on a super team. Your team has the torch, but it has much to do with the people around you as it has to do with Kevin Durant himself.
Kevin Durant, there may be no loyalty, but you've made up for an abundance of arrogance. Slow down. Chill out. I get what you're saying, but the torch hasn't been passed because LeBron is still the better player.
All right, James Harden. Move on to James Harden. He passed Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's now leading the league in scoring. He also leads the league in assists, which, as Reed pointed out to me, has not been done since 1972-73 when Nate Archibald did it, Reed?
Tiny Archibald. It's a name that we don't talk about enough. It's remarkable. I don't think we're going to be at that point by the end of the season when Chris Paul comes back. You will see James Harden's amazing numbers come back to earth.
James Harden is the beneficiary and the perfect vessel for Mike D'Antoni's offensive genius, and it is a beautiful thing to see. And while I agree with Reed, I hope that Chris Paul doesn't detract from this pretty, pretty remarkable basketball moment.
All right. Move on to a point guard who's not faring as well right now. Lonzo Ball sat again in the fourth quarter of the Sixers game of the Lakers game against the Sixers, where they lost, where Embiid went off, and he was dominated by Ben Simmons, who I'm coming around on. Luke Walton said he's not moving Lonzo to the bench. Bill?
Good. Stop overreacting. It'll work out. He's going to be fine. I don't like Luke Walton sitting in fourth quarters.
I made a really dumb bet with a close friend last night that I believe Lonzo Ball will either be an all-star or win a title in the next 5 years. It's a pretty significant bet. Two lessons here. One, I make bad bets.
How
two,
much?
We're 1 month in, man. Like,
how significant? You won $2,500
on a road trip to a Midwestern city, and I got to buy two really nice seats to a Midwestern team's NBA game.
You're going to win that bet. All-star game?
$500? What's that?
All-star game?
No. Just a random Midwestern.
No, he has to make an all-star game.
Oh, he has to make an all-star game or win a title. So if LeBron goes there, I feel that helps my chances. I still think he could make an all-star game.
It's a fame vote. You've already won.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. I feel smart now.
All right, last one.
Go.
Last one, guys. Are you ready for Professor Steph Curry? He's going to be doing an online class. He's going to teach a basketball class online for something called Masterclass, which is an online educational platform. And they have celebrity instructors like Serena Williams, Samuel L. Jackson, and Christina Aguilera. He's going to film 15 video lessons that will cover various basketball fundamentals and skills. It's $90 for an individual class or $180 a year for unlimited access to all the classes. Bill.
This is a great idea because friends of mine like Reed Forgrave desperately need this service.
Damn, you stole my line. I am going to up my YMCA 3-point shooting percentage from 5% to 7.5%. Thank you, Steph. You are my hero.
This is the Flagrant 2 podcast. We're going to get to Jamal Crawford in just a moment. But remember, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. I've got the app. Reed's got the app on our phones. It's by far the easiest way we found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere in just a few steps. We can instantly find our seats. Remember, and this is the best part of all, our listeners can get $20 off their SeatGeek purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Flagrant. That's Flagrant today. Again, download the SeatGeek app and download and put in the promo code Flagrant. It's been a long day. FLAGRANT. You get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. This is how Reed gets tickets to country music acts. It's how Joey gets tickets to some of the coolest musical venues in the world, and how I am going to go and watch Bob Seger as soon as I possibly can, and Kanye. SeatGeek is really – look, the app thing has changed our lives, whatever it may be, how you get around town, the food that you order, in Joey's case, the women that he meets. Trust me, SeatGeek is that for tickets. It is awesome. Promo code Flagrant, as in Flagrant 2, as in Flagrant Foul. As in, Joey is flagrantly a man who needs to get his beard shaved back. All right. Reed had a chance to have a great interview with Jamal Crawford, including a bold – you think Reed made a bold bet on Lonzo Ball? Jamal Crawford made a bold prediction about Lonzo in this remarkable, remarkable conversation between Reed Forgrave and Jamal Crawford starting right now.
Here with Jamal Crawford. Jamal – you were in LA 5 years, a place thins your blood. Are you looking forward to the Minnesota winter?
Yeah, I'm prepared now. Yeah, I got all the what's it called? Something goose?
Goose feathers?
Canada goose. There you go. I got the Canada goose jackets ready, so I'm prepared now. I'm good to go.
Yeah, well, doing better than I am, to be honest.
That's my wife. She gets the credit.
There you go.
She took care of me.
That's cool.
Took care of us.
Well, Tibbs is notorious for being a grinder, right? And I'm curious, what, so far, best part of playing for Tibbs and the worst part?
The best part is how much better of a player you'll be, because you get used to being comfortable being uncomfortable, because he's so prepared. You know what I mean? Like, it's unbelievable, actually. We were talking the other day, and I asked him if he saw a certain game, and he said, yeah, I have 5 TVs going. And with him, I take him serious, because he knows every second of every game that's not our game. Like, he's watching the whole – sorry about that. He's watching the whole league, you know what I mean? So he's just so prepared, and it's always fun talking basketball with him. That's
right. Well, I mean, Jimmy said there are times that you hate him as a coach, right? But, I mean, is that a good thing for a coach? Like, you want to almost be on your toes?
Yeah, you always want to be on your toes. And like I said, Tibbs has no agenda but to be – get the best out of you so we're the best team, you know, and that's, if that's the agenda for us to be the best team, then we're all for it, you know, and I think it's a good thing, you know, and you get used to going at a speed and going at a different gear, you know, and it becomes normal for you, so it makes you a better player. If you're a better player, we'll be a better team.
So this team got dogged a lot for its defense last year, and the numbers say, you know, you guys are still kind of toward the bottom of the league in defense.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, do you think those numbers are accurate, and what are the do you think they accurately reflect where this team's defense is at?
No, I don't, honestly. I think that there's obviously levels we can go to. I think there's more for us. And, you know, we're in the first month of the season, so I hope we're not peaking right now. But I think once our defense jumps up, we'll go to another level, you know, and another level or two, which is fun.
Well, I mean, I know everyone talks about defense, talk about effort and focus, but I'm curious on the execution angle. Like, what are, like, one or two things that you see are the parts that are missing right now?
Yeah, I think for us, little things can – if you miss enough little things, it can create a big mess. You know what I mean? I know we're prepared. I know nobody's going to be more prepared than we are. It could be transition this night. It could be helping the helper that night. So it's just a combination of things. And we've been good in stretches as well. So once we get those little cleanups, we'll go to another level.
I'm curious, the title of best six man in NBA history. Do you love it? Do you love that title, or is it kind of a weird title? Six man is kind of a strange, both. Strange
yeah,
job, right?
Both, because for me, that wasn't part of my journey. I never come off the bench until I came off the bench, you know? So for me, that wasn't like my goal or anything. I was just tired of losing. I wanted to go to a winning situation, and it called for me to come off the bench, and that's how that whole thing started.
What, did you hate it at first, or did it take an adjustment?
It because I wanted to win more than anything, but it took some adjusting. Like going into it that summer, I had to when we were playing 5-on-5, I would wait until the next game just to get used to kind of waiting until the action is going, then coming in the game. So that was a little bit different for me.
What, is it a different mentality as a six-man?
It's a different mentality. Obviously, you're sacrificing a lot, whether it be minutes or shots or whatever, you know, whatever personal things you have to sacrifice that, and it has to be for the betterment of the team. Also, now, especially with the way, you know, data is and film and everything, they know what you're coming off the bench to do. You know, it's like almost like a special teams that way. Like, all right, we're kicking it to them. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like they know exactly what you're coming to do, and you still have to impose your will or have an effect on the game with them knowing that.
You played with Chris Paul for a while, and playing with Jimmy now. Both guys who I see as alpha dogs.
Yeah.
Do you see any similarities in their leadership style?
Yeah, with them, the one thing that comes to mind first is they both play with no agenda. Like, they both play to win. You know, I think they both are absolute hard workers, you know, the hardest workers, but they both play with no agenda. They have no agenda but for the team to be good. And when you do that and it comes from a safe place, I think everybody follows and falls in line.
But do you immediately feel the vibe between Jimmy and Tibbs as soon as you get into training camp?
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell they've been together, and it's good because for us, Jimmy's been a great bridge. And not only Jimmy, Taj as well, you know, guys that play for Tibbs, because Tibbs could see something or say something, but then Jimmy could break it down like, hey, he's saying do this, this, and this, and, you know, then we'll get that reward from it. So it's cool.
I think you have the best biographical note of any player in the NBA today, the NBA career leader for 4-point plays. Do you practice that?
No. If you ever see me play, I play a crazy style. So I think I shoot it when they least expect it. And then by the time they try to react, I'm already in shooting motion, so I still get a good look at the basket.
Is it just a matter of I remember your shot, your game-winning shot against Thunder.
Yeah.
Where you couldn't even see the basket.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of, like, knowing where your spacing is?
It still matters, definitely. But, you know, you just got to trust the work. If you do it every day and practice it and practice and practice, it becomes second nature. And then it's just going through the motions of it.
So 5 years from now, Lonzo Ball. Star, bust, somewhere
star.
In between.
Absolutely a star because he plays – I love watching him play. He plays the right way. Like, he doesn't play for stats. He'll give the ball up early when he can easily hold it just to get an assist. He's making the right play. You know, if it was a hockey assist, he would get 20 a game because he's always passing up early. He seems like a great teammate. If you look at all his interviews and everything, always watch people's interviews because you seem to learn more about them if you didn't know about them, just how they think and, you know, what kind of drives them. And with him, he's always well-spoken. He's always about the team. And I think that's the recipe for success.
But would you mess with his shooting form at all?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, he's done his whole life.
Yeah,
I mean, even if he struggled, I'm sure he struggled. But when he makes 10 in a row, he won't change a thing. So I would just keep it consistent.
Do you think people go after him in this league defensively to say, I'm going to go lock him down all game long because of his dad?
I'm not sure because we haven't played him yet.
Yeah.
And just seeing, I think guys are competitive. Obviously, he gets a lot of attention. I mean, the Lakers on ESPN or TNT all the time, so he gets a lot of attention. But I don't think he brought that attention on himself. You know, he didn't do anything. He was supposed to.
Good attention or bad attention? I mean, forget the whole UCLA stuff going on right now. I just mean purely his dad being a headline grabber. Do you think that's good for someone's development?
Well, I think they're two different people. I mean, Lonzo, if we're talking about him specifically, like, he's always talking about the team. I saw he didn't play the fourth quarter the other day. He handled it in stride. He's like, you know what? The guys are playing better. I'm glad we won the game, bottom line. So he handles everything like a pro, like you want a guy to handle it.
I'm with you. People saying he's a bust already. It's so ridiculous.
How,
so stupid.
How can you say that?
Yeah, a month in his career.
That's like listening to, you know, two songs on the album, like, oh, it's a classic, or it's terrible. Like, you haven't even, like, give it time. You know?
That's what the media does, right?
Yeah, obviously.
Wait, tell me, prettiest shooting form in the NBA right now?
Probably Carmelo.
Yeah.
Yeah, Melo, but all time, I think Ray Allen. I think his jumper is, like, picture perfect.
What, is that one that you study?
I don't think I could ever get mine to be as pretty as his, so I didn't even study. I just look at it and admire it, to be
honest.
It's
just like a work of art, right?
Yeah, it's like a work of art. You admire it and you say, that was a beautiful strike.
What player do you hate most when he's guarding you?
I'm not sure I have one I hate most, but there's some really good defensive players out there. Tony Allen's a great defensive player. Kawhi is a great defensive player. I get one, see one every day in practice in Jimmy. So there's some great defensive players out there. So
last one, you played with Scottie Pippen a while. I know that coming into the league, a lot of people said Andrew Wiggins, Scottie Pippen-like. It's an impossible comparison. But I'm curious, do you see hints of that? And what does he need to like reach that sort of level?
Wiggs doesn't have a ceiling, to be honest with you. Like, certain guys, when you see them from a distance, you know they're good. When you see him up close, you're like, oh, they're really good. They're not as good as I thought they were. And he's one that is better than I thought he was. And I already thought he was good. Like, there's no ceiling for him. Like, I've seen him in different situations. I've seen him hit a game-tying basket or things that I've seen him make plays for people. He's 22 years old. So I wasn't nowhere near that at 22. Like, he's special.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Reed, great, by the way. It was a really, really interesting interview. I like Jamal Crawford so much.
Yeah.
Good guy. Follows me on Twitter, which is really nice of him.
Speaking of Twitter, you know his Twitter description of himself is so rare for a basketball player. Usually it's like ball all day. And his is, I love basketball, but basketball doesn't define me. And I think it's like the most Jamal Crawford statement ever. Like,
an incredibly interesting dude.
Yeah. Like him a ton, man. Like, and also, by the way, like him as a person. Great interview. Such a fun basketball player to watch, man. His handles are ridiculous. His shot's ridiculous. Yeah, he's probably like one of my top 10 NBA players that I just like to take in his game. Big comments on Lonzo Ball.
Yeah,
huh?
what did you think about the Lonzo Ball comment? What was your sort of read on that?
I agree with him, man. He thinks he's going to be a superstar. Everyone's so hard on Lonzo, right? They're killing him. They're absolutely killing him right now. Because why are they killing him? Okay, because he's shooting like negative 42%. But they're also killing him because his dad's LeVar, and his dad talks a lot and is kind of a blowhard, and we love LeVar on the show, but you know, LeVar brings some heat to his son. That's why people hate Lonzo. And I loved Jamal saying that, because that's a guy whose basketball acumen, obviously, I trust.
The fact that they don't think he should change his shot is like, I kind of agree with it. I think it's in his head, Reed.
Yeah, I think it is in his head. I mean, look, the shot's going to fall, man. The shot's going to fall. The fact that he doesn't think he should change his shot, I think, is really important. The fact that he thinks he's going to be a, quote, superstar, I don't think I put that into his head. I think Jamal, like, was thinking that before. I'm like, hey, you think he's going to be a superstar? I love it, man. I love it. And then, yeah, I mean, it's funny that we'd go from Lonzo Ball's shooting form to the prettiest current shooting form in the NBA. I know when I told you what he said here, Joey, you took a little offense. He said mellow, huh?
It just sort of blew me away. It's like, I think, Bill, how many guys could you name, like, just without your feelings on mellow aside, right?
Honestly,
if I just said to you the prettiest shot in the league,
53 other guys.
Exactly. Like, he's a great scorer. He's always been a great scorer, and he can shoot, but like, I mean, I bet you he's a mid-30s career 3-point shooter at best, right? Like,
That's a great question. I'm gonna guess 32%.
Like,
no, honestly, I'm gonna guess 36%.
It caught me totally off guard when I listened to it, and I thought it was interesting.
Joey, who would you pick? Prettiest shooting
Steph.
Form.
I mean, it's not.
Yes.
I think for me, I mean,
I think Clay's in the conversation.
Clay. I think KD's in the conversation.
I would say Clay.
I would say, well, look.
Joking, career 3-point shooting, 35.7%. Can I give a theory why I think Crawford said that? Why Melo gets so much love from the guys in the league beyond what I think he deserves, and why there's this schism between those who cover it and watch it and those who are in it? I think two things. I think Melo's a great human being, and when guys work with great people, they always overstate their excellence. Like, I think he's a great person to be around. Treats players well, right? Classy guy. Like, for all the hard times I give him, I think he's a good person. And I think that players, especially Jamal Crawford, have a ton of respect for natural scorers who are the best scorers. I mean, Melo may not have utilized it or lived up to it, but he's one of the greatest scorers in the history of the game ever.
Just past AI.
Yeah. I mean, he's just as a gift, right? You hear actors talk, right? And some actors won't win as many awards or make as much money or become as famous, but the best of the best of the actors, like the guys that really can act at another level that only actors can appreciate, you'll hear them talk in respectful tones about those people. I think Melo's that as a scorer, and it leads to comments like this.
Love it. I love it. Yeah, that one threw me off. It did not throw me off when he said Ray Allen. You know, the other thing that threw me off. He was talking about the idea of playing for Tibbs and how Tibbs doesn't have an agenda. And I wasn't prepared for that, and I wasn't sure exactly what he was getting into. And that was sort of – I think I was getting toward the end of the interview there. And so I didn't go in any deeper on it. But is that – I don't know. Do you guys see that as any sort of veiled shots on previous coaches? I don't think so. But, Joey, I know that was something you brought up, Joey.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just – it was interesting to me. Like, you know, he didn't have to – why does he have to bring up his agenda at all? He said it's good playing for him because, you know, he just wants to win and he has no agenda.
Yep. Dude, it was a really good interview. Yeah, Jamal's a really good dude. He's absolutely going to obviously go into broadcasting when he's done. We should definitely have him on again. Really, really enjoyed the conversation. By the way, and I am really glad that I found these guys. Fantasy basketball fans, I promise, listen up. This includes Reed, who's into his team. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try our new favorite app. It's called Draft. It's right simple. Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys, the other sites. None of that BS. In fact, I used it a couple days ago, and I crushed some fools, including Reed. On Draft, you play real-life snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts just one night, and there's no management. You draft the team, you forget, and you got it. It's done. Daily fantasy basketball. Guy like Reed Forgrave, you get him to the same one as you, and you beat him, you can send him 31 text messages, and it was like 11. Talking
it was a lot
whole
of text
bunch of smack. Once you're done drafting and you're finished, you sit back and you count your victories. And by the way, draft starts every couple minutes, so you could join one right now. I'm going to do it when the podcast gets over and take on these two schmoes. The best part is you can play for cold, hard cash. It starts at just $1, so there's a draft for everyone, whether you want to spend $1, $5, $25, and beyond. And the pride is always there against strangers or friends of yours. Get them to sign up too. No salary caps. Playing a real-life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in a season-long league. Come and join me on Draft today. Can't promise you win all of them, but I promise you'll beat Reed. Download the app anytime. Just search. I say that because Reed being like four of the five, but I won the last one.
Yeah,
just
search. Who took Embiid yesterday?
Just search Draft victory. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes or play right from your computer at draft.com. That's draft.com for a limited time only. By the way, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use our promo code. It's FB today, as in fantasy basketball. That's FB today. That's right. Play a real money game for free just using our promo code FB today on your first deposit, and you get a freebie. Reed Forgrave, you wrote a column and you went to the game about the Timberwolves and their defense, and I'll sort of set it up this way. Last year they had a top, actually it wasn't top 10, it was top 11 offensive efficiency rating. They're good enough to be in the top 10. This year they've been kind of in and out, right in that 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 range. It's their defense that was bad last year. It's been bad at times this year. What should our conclusion be and our expectation for where it's going to head under, obviously, a head coach in Tibbs who is a defensive guru?
Look, first of all, Wednesday night, beat the Spurs, held the Spurs to their fewest points of the season. Look, obviously a couple of asterisks next to that game. Second game of back-to-back for the Spurs. Don't have Tony Parker, don't have Kawhi Leonard. Still, beating the Spurs, having a great defensive game, shows you what this team can be, and yet they aren't that on defense. 2 years ago, year before Tibbs came, they were 27th in the NBA in defensive rating. That's not good. Last year, Tibbs comes in and they're still 26th in the NBA in defensive rating, and it was actually a slightly worse defensive rating, moved down from 107.1 to 109.1. Okay, maybe these guys are taking a little while to adjust to Tibbs. Wiggins still growing into his defensive game. He's lots of mental lapses. Karl Towns isn't quite the defensive player we expected he could become when he came to the league. Total overhaul in the offseason. They bring in Tibbs guys. They bring in Jimmy Butler. They bring in Taj Gibson. They bring in guys who know the system. look, this team is still clearly adjusting to Tibbs' system, still adjusting to the, you know, they're 1 month into this very new roster, but they're still sitting at 26th in the NBA in defensive rating. We're 14 games into the season at this point. This is, you know, getting close to outside that whole small sample size area. And yet when I, before this game, after this game, I went and talked to Tibbs, to Wiggins, to Towns about this. And I kept asking them, like, explain this to me. What's up with this? Why are you guys – they have a defensive rating that would be – if they kept their first quarter defensive rating up throughout all four quarters, they would have the second best defensive rating in the NBA next to the Celtics, which is ridiculous and remarkable. And how the hell can it be that second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, they are among the worst teams in the league? Got some interesting answers from these guys. Wiggins, not the most verbose fellow, but he's basically like, you know what? Like, we see it in flashes. We just need to do it for 48 minutes. And it's true. You do see it for flashes with this team. They have some defensive talent. They have some big time defensive talent, but they can't keep it up for 48 minutes. I do. Tibbs wasn't as concerned about it as I expected him to be. Carl Towns basically said, throw all the numbers you want at me, bro. The only number I care about is our record, and our record's pretty damn good. Can't disagree with that. They're sitting at third in the West right now, which is, you know, equal or surpasses every single one of the high expectations on this team this season. And Jamal Crawford, we heard what he said in that interview. It's just a matter of all these little mistakes. And they are little things, but they just add up. And you can see them lose focus throughout the game in certain parts, give up easy buckets. But I honestly do believe, and maybe it's because I live in Minnesota, this top five city in America, as we've clearly defined many times on this podcast.
Sure,
maybe
it's fact. Hard facts.
Hard facts. Only hard facts for me. Maybe it's just because talking to these guys, and they really don't seem concerned. And they seem to be working hard. And you do see the flashes with Andrew Wiggins, a guy who's not been good defensively. You still see the flashes with him. I think they're going to put it together by March and have a, we'll call it like league average defensive rating. I bet they will be in the teens by March.
They're 27th right now.
They're 27th, 26th. Yeah, they're not good. They're
terrible.
I refuse
to give up basketball reference. Forget you, NBA.com/stats. Basketball reference forever.
It's weird how they're slightly different. Yeah, so I mean, they're terrible.
Basketball
right now.
Reference forever, Joey.
No.
I'm an NBA.com guy, bro.
NBA.com. It's a good impression. Bill does great impressions of me.
I did make fun of Joey on the radio today. I felt right.
No, you should. I liked your Ty Lue impressions last year. They were killed that guy in the playoffs.
I did. I was pretty mean. I'm pretty mean. I'm pretty mean sometimes.
Yeah, but I think look. Are the Timberwolves going to be a stalwart, defensive stalwart? I don't think so. But do I think they can be middle of the pack in the league? Yes, and that's frankly like all they need to be this year. I think they're going to be a top five seed in the West when push comes to shove.
What if push comes to shove and shove comes to fight?
Oh gosh, then they're screwed. Then they're screwed. I think that then they're, you know, they're a lottery team.
Honest question: does Andrew Wiggins put more effort into defense or more effort into interviews?
Defense.
No, come on, that's not an easy answer.
No, it's an easy answer.
He doesn't.
Does not like the spotlight.
Does not like
all.
Playing defense either.
You see him when he is trying. When he is trying. And I think he just loses focus. Mm-hmm. But when he's trying, I think he has the tools to be a really, really good defender. I mean, that's – when coming into the league, we thought, hey, this guy has Pippen-esque tools on defense.
What did you just say?
Scottie Pippen-esque tools. That's what people were saying.
I thought you said something else. I'm not even going to repeat it. Okay, got it. Sorry.
I was like, what?
Please continue.
You lost me. I'm really curious. Yeah, man. The dude hates interviews so much that I feel like he puts more effort into like making a peanut butter jelly sandwich than sitting down for interviews, which I don't blame him.
Peanut butter jelly sandwich?
What's that?
When was the last time you had a peanut butter jelly sandwich?
Like 2 days ago.
No, you did not.
I frequently eat peanut butter and jelly. I love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, man.
By the way, June of this year, 538 named Andrew Wiggins the least defensive player in the league.
I know. And yet, you can see flashes. I'm telling you, man. Like, he gets lost defensively, and it happens too often. And it's really funny seeing Tibbs, like, on the offensive end, he just kind of lets the guys go. On defensive end, he's shouting at him, Carl, what are you doing? He's going to have a heart attack, basically, is what I'm saying. But he has – I mean, dude, he has all the tools that he should be good.
By the way, a little aside, an interesting moment today where the national news story, we're recording this podcast obviously on Thursday night, was Al Franken and the accusations and the photos of sexual harassment and the accuser, Leanne Tweeden, my former co-host, someone I know very well, from my radio days in Los Angeles. So it's amazing. When you do this business, when you're in this business long enough, how small the world becomes. You know, like how much your 2 degrees of separation from everyone. All right,
one of my best friends in Minneapolis was a staffer for Al Franken for 5 years, man. There's degrees of separation, bro.
Small world. The Flagrant 2 podcast with Bill Ryder and Reed Forgrave, a somewhat shortened version today. Remember to rate and review warmly. Reed, great job on the Jamal Crawford interview. You need to shave that beard, buddy. Don't stop. Why are you going all Joey on me, man?
Talking to me or are you talking to me?
You.
I thought you were talking to me.
It's the longest it's ever been.
It's big.
Joey inspires me, bro. It's fluffy right now. It's super fluffy.
There you go.
Getting weird up in here. Getting weird up in here. We will be back next week with a beautiful edition of the Flagrant 2.